We continue Soul Music Week with the man who virtually invented soul music, Ray Charles. He was nicknamed the genius, not just for his great singing and piano playing, but also for his producing, arranging, and choice of songs. Many of the songs he's recorded over the years come from country music, pop, and jazz. I spoke with him in 1998, after the release of a box set collecting his country and western recordings. It included this hit.
Give your hand to me, and then you say hello, and I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so, and anyone can tell you think you know me well, but you don't know me.
No, you don't know me.
No, you don't know the one. Dreams of you at night, and longs to kiss your lips, and longs to hold you tight. Oh, I'm just a friend, that's all I've ever been, 'cause you don't know me.
Ray Charles was born in 1930 in Albany, Georgia, and grew up in Greenville, Florida. When he was six, he started gradually losing his sight as a result of glaucoma. I asked him if he realized what was happening.
Well, as far as losing my sight, I knew that because my mom was very astute. I mean, I don't know how she managed to come up with the idea she did, you know, but see, because she didn't have no psychologist to tell her to do this or tell her to do that. But she knew I was going to lose my eyesight. And so since she knew I was going to lose my sight, she started showing me how to get around and how to do things without seeing. Like, she would tell me, okay, I'm going to show you where this chair is, okay? Now, since you can't see that chair, you're going to have to teach yourself to remember that that chair is there. Or you got to teach yourself to remember that that table is there. Or you got to teach yourself to remember to turn right when you get to da 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 da. And of course, she started with me with me when I started to lose my eyesight. So I gained an awful lot. And of course, being that age, it wasn't as much of a shock as, say, it would be if I was, say, losing my sight at the age of 30 or 40 or something, where you've seen all your life.
Did you go through a long period of depression afterwards?
No, because when I, by the time I started losing my sight for sure, I was going to a school for the deaf and the blind. And, you know, children, you know, I'm sure you're aware of this, but children can be very brutal. I mean, to each other.
Yeah, no kidding, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you go in there, like when I first went there, I was very homesick and I was crying. And you know what you go through, because where I went to school was about 130 or 40 miles from where I live, you know. So there was a state school for the blind and deaf, as I say. So I was crying and missing my mom and all that. And see, kids, instead of sympathizing with, they would pick on you and make you feel bad, you know. So you know, they'll get you out of that kind of groove.
Did you have good medical care at the time?
Oh no, honey, you know, you're thinking about much later in life. I mean, I bless your heart. I appreciate the question, but no medical. I mean, I don't think anybody in those days even knew what that was.
Right.
As a matter of fact, we had one hospital on the campus, and you won't believe this, but this is the facts. It was one hospital there, and it was on what they called the white side. It was not, we had to go over to the white side if we needed to go to the hospital. I mean, that was just the way it was. Nobody thought nothing about it, because, hey, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is.
Well, it's kind of amazing, isn't it, that here you are going to school for people who are blind, and it's a segregated school.
That's
so
right.
You're segregated by color, which you can't even see.
That's right. That's right. But you know, I'm sure you probably will never understand it, because I never understood, and I've lived a lot longer than you, and I can tell you, I've never understood how somebody can be against me and yet let me cook their food for them, feed them. You know, don't make sense, does it?
Was it at the boarding school for children who were blind and deaf that you first learned to play music?
Exactly. Yeah, I started. I couldn't get into music class the first year I was in school because the class was full. So, I mean, I couldn't get into piano class, so I started taking up clarinet. That's why I can play clarinet and saxophone.
Wait,
today.
So you played clarinet first?
Oh, yeah.
How'd you like the instrument?
I loved it. Well, I was a great fan of Artie Shaw. I used to love him. Everybody was talking about Benny Goodman, but I was an Artie Shaw man. I mean, 100%. And I was very impressed by what he could do with a clarinet. And naturally, he was my mentor. I wanted to play. But I wanted to be in the piano class. But since I couldn't, I figured, well, okay, I'll play clarinet. And I did that. And of course, but the next year, I was able to get into the piano class.
Did you give up clarinet?
No, I studied both. I kept studying both instruments, but naturally my heart was with the keyboard because I mean that's just because there's so much you can do when you play piano. I by the time I was 12 years old, 13 years old, I could write a whole arrangement for a 17-piece band. See, that's the great thing. If you study piano, it gives you a whole outlook on a lot of different things that has to do with music.
Now, what were the early kinds of places you performed in?
Oh, they were like. Places one way in and one way out. You know what I mean? They were places like like dance halls, and they would and a lot of them would sell beer and they'd sell fish and chicken and stuff like that. But like I said, it was one way in, one way out. So if a fight broke out, you know, it was kind of rough. Those were the days. I have to say that. They were good experiences, but I would not like to do them again, you know, because, like I said, we were playing dances in those days, and, of course, anything could happen.
Now, early in your career, you went through a period, like many people do early on, of trying to figure out who you were musically, and before you really figured that out, you sounded very much like you had patterned yourself on Nat Cole and Charles Brown.
That's right.
What did they both mean to you? Why did you feel so strongly about them?
I just love the way. Well, Nat Cole, the reason he was so powerful in my life was the fact that I wanted to do exactly what he was doing. Most people think of Nat Cole as a great singer, you know, they know his voice. But I was looking at Nat Cole as a pianist. I mean, he was one of the, people don't realize, but Nat Cole was a hell of a pianist. He played some of that tasty stuff behind his singing. And that's what I wanted to do, was to be able to play little tasty things behind what I was singing. So I really tried to pattern myself after Nat Cole in the early beginnings of my career.
And Charles Brown, the rhythm and blues.
And Charles Brown had that real. I don't know how you would call it. He had that. He always sounded like he was pleading, begging. You know, really pleading in his songs or crying. You know, and I like that. He always sounded like he was sincere. Whatever he was singing about, he was genuine. He meant it. That's the way I took Charles Brown, and I liked it, especially when he was singing the blues or something like Merry Christmas, Baby, and stuff like that.
Well, I thought we could listen to the very first recording that you made, which is Confession Blues.
Oh, my goodness. Where did you find that?
On one of your box sets. it was easy.
Oh, brother. Yeah, that's one of the things where I was, you got me down pat. I must have been about 17 years old at that time when I made that.
This is 1949. Let's hear it, and then we'll talk about it.
I want to tell you a story. Of a boy who was once in love. I want to tell you a story of a boy who was once in love. And how the girl that I loved robbed me of the happiness I dreamed of. She called me fine, sweet, and mellow. That didn't mean a thing.
That was Ray Charles' first recording made in 1949. How did you start to get a sense of who you were as a singer? and start to establish your own sound?
Oh, well, around about 19... Well, I started thinking about it in the 1951, somewhere in there, in 1950 or 51, but I was scared to try it because, I could get a lot of work sounding like Nat Cole. You know, I could work in nightclubs and I could make a living, with his sound. You know, I could take the amplifier and tune it and add a little bass and a little bit of treble or something like that to it and sound pretty close, almost just like it, you know. But then I knew what I woke up one morning and I started to thinking that I said to myself, nobody knows my name. Everybody said to me, hey, kid, you sound just like Nat Cole. Hey, kid. It was always, hey, kid. Nobody never said Ray. Never, never, never. So I started telling myself, your mom always told you to be yourself. And you got to be yourself if you're going to make it in this business. I know you love Nat Cole, but you got to stop that. It was just a question of thinking one morning when I woke up, people don't even know my name. I'm just Hey Kid.
My guest is Ray Charles. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. It's Soul Music Week on Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1998 interview with Ray Charles. Is there a record that you think of as being the first recording that you made as yourself, really establishing yourself?
Probably I Got a Woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was it. Because that when I did that, that seemed to upset a lot of people. But it was really me.
It upset a lot of people?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people thought that it was too religious and I was bastardizing the church. And, oh, man, I got all kinds of criticism.
Oh, you mean you were using too much of a sanctified sound for a sexual record?
Yeah, that's right. But it was really me. It was 100% me. And, of course, I just said, well, I have to be criticized because I'm going to sing the way I sing. And later on, after some other people start doing it, then they start calling it soul music. It just goes to show you, I guess I was a little ahead of my time or something.
Well, I think that's inarguable. Why don't we hear I Got a Woman? And this is my guest, Ray Charles.
Well, I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh, yeah. Say, I got a woman way over town, good to me. Oh, yeah, she give me money when I'm in need. Yeah, she's a kind of friend indeed. I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh, yeah, she says a loving early in the morning just for me.
That's Ray Charles, the recording that he said was the first one that really sounded like his own style. The record that we just heard, I Got a Woman, was one of your early recordings for Atlantic.
Yes.
When you started recording for Atlantic, what was it like for you to find your audience?
Oh, it was very... Atlantic was a great company, babe. I have to tell you, for me, now I'm only speaking for myself because I know some people will say, oh man, boom, Ray, you're wrong. But for me, it was a great company because what Atlantic did, they were smart in the sense that they never, ever tried to sway me in any way, form, shape, or fashion as to what should I do when it comes to music. All they did was, whenever I wanted to record, wherever I wanted to record, they would come and pay the bill. That's all they would do. And it left me open to record, wherein like a lot of kids today, they have producers and they got to record what the producers say. And the producer says, I want you to sound like who had the last hit. So you don't have, when I was coming up, I didn't have no pressure. I could just, Atlantic said, hey, you might not have a hit now, but you're going to have a hit. And it was true because I made 3 or 4 records for Atlantic before, they didn't do anything. But then we came up with a song called Doing the Mess Around, which was a big hit. It Should Have Been Me. And next thing we had, I Got a Woman. So, but the first 2 or 3 records I made didn't sell. But you can't do that in today's age. You make 2 or 3 records that don't sell now and you're out.
Ray Charles recorded in 1998.